ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 7 टेक्स्ट 13 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील एसी भक्तिवेदांता स्वामी प्रभुपाद फाउंडर आचार्य ऑफ इस्कॉन।
इथं धृत भगवद्व्रत आयनेयाजिन वाससानु सवनाभिषेकाद्र कपिश कुटिल चटा कलापेन च विरोचमान सूर्यार्चा भगवन्तं हिरण्मयं पुरुषं उज्जिहाने सूर्यमण्डले भूपतिष्ठन् एतद् उहोवाच।
Translation. Text 13, chapter 7. Read the translation again now. Shirupam Sahudratam 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 Sadvaitam Sahudratam Pachana Saitam Krishna Taitanyadeva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivashakan Vitamascha Shri Krishna Taitanya Bhavanityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. From the external point of view, it may have appeared that Maharaj Bharat was a sun worshipper, not Bharata, Bharat. It may appear that he was worshipping the sun, but actually he was worshipping Lord Narayan, who is expanded as the sun deity, or Lord Narayan, who is residing within the sun planet. The sun, we can consider as a remarkable planet. Actually, according to, at least in English, we don't call the sun a planet. According to modern astronomy, the sun is a star. According to modern astronomy, the sun is one of many stars, and all the stars are just like suns with their own solar systems. However, according to Vedic cosmology, Vedic understanding, this is not correct. That there is one sun within the universe, and the stars, they are of a different nature. They're all called loka, means they're planets. The sun is also a planet. It's called Surya Loka. Inasmuch as there are living beings there also. Now, it may be doubted how there can be living beings within the sun, because the sun is very hot. And it would be thought that any living being that entered into the sun must surely burn to pieces. However, Srila Prabhupada has explained this apparent quandary by explaining, or giving the example, that within this planet there are living beings everywhere. There are living beings on the land, in the sky, within the earth, within the water. They have suitable bodies for their existence as such. The living entities that live within the water have suitable bodies for existing within the water. Some living beings, they live at the North Pole. We can't live there, but they live there. By nature's arrangement or God's arrangement, their body is suitably adjusted. So similarly, living beings can live within fire also. And in fact, in fairly recently, within the last 4 or 5 years, some scientists made some astonishing discovery that they took some sample of water from the ocean bed at a place where there was a volcanic eruption. The scientists do all kinds of funny things. There's no need for them to go in the ocean and study all these things. But for the sake of the advancement of knowledge, they do strange things like going into the ocean and taking out water from the ocean bed. So anyway, they took some of this water. They were inside their, what's that called, bathyscope, isn't that? They're at the bottom of the ocean. And they took this water, which was at 300 degrees Celsius temperature. and put it under a microscope to see what they could see. And they saw so many microorganisms. Now, according to scientific knowledge up to then, no living being could live beyond 100 degrees Celsius. That's why in India, people, they're advised to boil the water. Actually, that's supposed to kill all germs. But even if it doesn't, then it will at least precipitate the excess salts, and then you strain it and the water becomes more digestible. I think you have to speak a little more loudly, even though you have a mic. So, according to this discovery, living beings can live at very high temperatures also. So, according to Vedic knowledge, living beings can live even within fire. They can live even within the sun. And there are, according to Vedic understanding, there are living beings within the sun. Just as our bodies are composed mostly of solids and liquids, in other words, the earth element and the water element. So living beings on the sun, their bodies are composed mainly of the fire element. I think you have to speak more forcefully, more loudly. Now, when we say element, the understanding of element in the Vedic understanding is different to that as given in the periodic table in modern chemistry. The basic gross elements listed in Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures are earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Now, in the periodic table, you'll find how many? More than 130. They've probably discovered some more since I was at school. More than 130 elements. But in the Vedic understanding, there are only five basic gross elements, plus three subtle elements, namely mind, intelligence, and false ego. So what that means is that anything solid like this, that is composed of earth element. That means that it is a transformation of the earth element. Now, within something may be predominantly composed of earth, but there may be other elements there also. Just like within this wood, there's some of the water element. Now, within our bodies, earth, water, fire, air, ether, all these things are there. The solid part, that is composed of earth. Water, blood, these are mostly, the liquids within the body are mostly composed of water. This is easy to understand. That there is fire within our body is also apparent by the heat of the body. How is our body hot? There is some natural heat. This is due to the presence of the fire element. There is also fire present within the stomach. That's called the fire of digestion. It means that within the stomach there are certain acids. So acids, they partake of the fire element. So there is also air within our body. According to Ayurvedic science, the disturbance of the life airs is the cause of so many diseases. The different airs within the body, apart from the air that we directly breathe, there are also airs that facilitate the moving of the body, even the eyelashes. It means a pushing of air, adjustment of air. There's also air within the stomach. Sometimes that comes up. Air within the intestines facilitates the pushing out of stool and sometimes comes out as a bad-smelling gas. So this disorientation of airs causes disease.
Yep.
Diseases such as rheumatism and arthritis, they are caused by excess air within the body. And when airs become disarranged in the brain section, then there may be mental diseases. The ether element is omnipresent, the most subtle of the gross elements. It is that element which constitutes the space within which everything else can move. So these are the basic elements. Now within our body, earth and water predominate. According to modern scientists, our bodies are made up of more than 90% water. Now, within the sun planet, the bodies are composed of the fire element, predominantly of the fire element. It means that fire can also transform into the form of bodies and houses, abodes, and so many different things. These are the descriptions of the Vedic literatures. Now, the sun god, he is the predominating deity of the many living beings who live within that planet, the sun planet. And within that planet, within the sun, there is the deity of Lord Narayana, who is worshipped by the sun god and all the inhabitants of the sun planet. And it is from him that the amazing effulgence and energy of the sun comes. According to modern scientists, the sun gives out more heat and light, more energy in 1 second than could be used in the human society in many millions of years. And the sun has been giving out such tremendous energy since time immemorial. Still, the sun is not becoming tired. The sun is not falling asleep. Yesterday you were leaning on your hand, today you're leaning on the mridanga. The sun is not becoming bereft of energy. Described as having ashesha teja, unlimited energy. So how is that possible? If we see anything within our experience, then if it has energy, unless the energy is replenished, it must become, in course of time, devoid of energy. In the science of Vedic analogy, there's one example called Deepa Sneha Nyai. Deepa means lamp. Sneha means oil. And Nyai means logic. So a lamp can burn with a wick as long as there is oil. If the oil runs out, then the light, the flame goes out. That's why it's one of the jobs of pujaris in traditional temples to go around and put oil in the lamps. Housewives in traditional homes to make sure that the lamp is enough oil. Before the sun sets, you have to make sure there's enough oil in all the lamps. So that always, the source of energy has to be constantly replenished. So how is it that the sun, which is giving out fantastic, inconceivable amounts of energy at every second, does not become burned out? The answer is because everything comes from Krishna. Krishna is the source of everything. Krishna is the source of all energy. If you're feeling very energetic, it's not because you are so fit and healthy, but because Krishna is giving you the energy. Therefore, Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Rasoham apse kuntiya prabhasmi shashi suryayo pranava sarva vedeshu shabdake purushang nrishu. Krishna says that I am the taste in water, I am the light of the sun and the moon, I am the sound in ether, I am the syllable Om in the Vedic mantras, I am the ability in man. There is one whole chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the 10th chapter, which is called the Vibhuti Yoga chapter, in which Krishna describes some of his vibhutis. Vibhuti means something we see in the material world which is wonderful. Krishna gives so many examples. Among mountains, he is Meru. Among immovable objects, he is the Himalayas. Of wielders of weapons, he is Ram. Of fishes, he is the Makara. And Krishna concludes that by saying that anything wonderful that you see, yad yad vibhuti mat sadvam srimad urjitam evava tattad evavagachatam mama tejong sa sambhavam. Anything wonderful you see in this world, that is possible by just a slight manifestation of my unlimited opulences. So if you see a person who has extraordinary ability, you should understand this is coming from Krishna. Or if we ourselves have some ability, we should not become proud, but we should know this is coming from Krishna. By Krishna's grace, most people are able to do something a little bit better than others. Someone is very intelligent and passes their examinations very easily. Someone is good at dancing. Someone has bodily beauty. Someone has bodily strength. Someone is a good singer. Someone is a good cook. Or you may be also good at doing something which is completely useless, like running fast. Generally not very useful. We have all these sports Olympic games. People are given medals for doing something which is of no use to anybody, better than anybody else. So everyone has some ability. You should know that ability is coming from Krishna. So the ability of the tiny ant to lift a grain of sugar comes from Krishna. Do you have in Lithuania these dung beetles? They get the cow stool and they roll it into balls. The little beetle, one kind of bug. Have you seen that? They go into the stool and they roll it in a ball with their very strong back legs. They roll a big ball of cow dung, bigger than themselves, and they roll it away somewhere. I don't know what they do with it. You explained all that in such a short few words? Huh? 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 I don't know how the translation's going on. Anyway. So they're very, very strong. They can roll a big ball of cow dung bigger than their own body. So that ability is coming from Krishna. So the ability of the ant, the ability of the beetle comes from Krishna. And the ability of the sun to give unlimited heat and light also comes from Krishna. Everything comes from Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. As Krishna says in the Gita, everything comes from me, everything is produced by me. Chakshurisha savita sakala grahanam rajasamasta suramurti rashesha tejaha yas yageya brahmati sangrita kala chakro govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. The description of the sun in relation to Krishna is given in Brahma Samhita. That the sun is just like the eye of the Supreme Lord. The sun has unlimited heat and light. The sun is going in his orbit, giving out this unlimited heat and light since time immemorial, by the order of Govinda, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Bharat Maharaj was worshipping Lord Narayan, who is present in the sun planet, and from whom the energy of the sun comes, by whose energy everything is maintained in the universe, and by whose blessings the sun god and all the residents of the sun become auspicious for the rest of the universe. Sometimes it's misunderstood that the Vedic religion is polytheistic. Actually, it is monotheistic. It recognizes that there is only one God. But it also recognizes that there are many powerful assistants of the Supreme Lord, who are therefore known as devatas or demigods. So Bharat Maharaj was not a demigod worshipper, but he was a worshipper of the Supreme Lord, as situated within the sun planet. Hare Krishna. Any question? Now, here it said that the Lord Narayan within the sun planet is worshipped by the Gayatri Mantra. People without higher knowledge take it that this Gayatri Mantra is meant for worshipping the sun god, but actually it's meant for worshipping Lord Narayana, who is situated within the sun planet. Or actually, it can be understood to be worshipping Lord Vishnu without any particular reference to the sun at all. So Surya Narayana, he is the form of Lord Vishnu situated within the sun planet. Or sometimes the sun god is described as Surya Narayana, but he is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is a powerful representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the matter of giving light and heat to the universe, he acts in an inconceivable manner by the grace of the original Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Recently, 5th canto of Bhagavatam was released in Russian? Is it recently? Seems like all the devotees are trying to accommodate it in their brains. Well, you won't be able to. Even if the universe is seen from a mechanistic point of view, you can't understand the explanations of the mundane astronomers. Probably the most popular theory of the more than 2,000 theories of the origin of the universe given by astrophysicists. Shall I say that shortly? There are more than 2,000 theories of the origin of the universe given by modern astrophysicists, of which One of the most popular is advocated by Stephen Hawking, the most famous astrophysicist of the modern age, is that the universe just came from nothing. There was nothing, and all of a sudden, out of nothing, there was a big bang, and then the universe existed. So if they think we have unusual ideas, well, they have their own unusual ideas. The only thing is that our apparently unusual ideas are recognized by Shastra, which are given by God, who made the universe. So he should know what he's talking about. As far as our ability to understand it, well, we are very limited. Imagine trying to explain to an ant who's living in this room how this house came about. An ant doesn't have the intellectual ability to understand. So we are something like that. We are ants compared to the universe. So, another question?
Yeah. What you mean, what is fanatism? What is fanatism?
Fanaticism means to hold to a dogma without any proper understanding or reason. No intelligence. Therefore, in our Krishna conscious movement, we're so much concerned with philosophy.
The deal.
We regularly discuss philosophy to try to understand these points with the intelligence that Krishna has given us. As we were discussing yesterday, Vedic mantras have to be given by a spiritual master in parampara to have effect. There's one so-called sampradaya in India called the Gayatri Pariva. So-called sampradaya called the Gayatri Pariva. Pariva means family. So they advocate the loud chanting of the Gayatri mantra. And occasionally you see their groups, a few people, they go around doing harinam of, or a public chanting of Gayatri mantra.
Om Bhur Bhuva Swa Tat Savitra Varinyam Bhago Devasya Dhimahi Dhyo Yo Na Prachodayat. Om Bhur Bhuva Swa Tat Savitra.
Like this, they go around chanting like this.
Yeah,
it's a speculation. This is not the way the Gayatri mantra is supposed to be given in parampara system and recited silently. So anyone can chant. It's a well-known chant. The Gayatri mantra is well-known. Previously in India, if someone who wasn't properly initiated into this chanting, if they started chanting that, then the brahmanas would get the king to come and kill him. In the Ramayana, there's a story of a shudra who was performing austerities for the sake of going to the heavenly planets. So at the request of the brahmanas and the demigods, Ram went and killed him because he was taking up some practice without the proper qualification or without following the proper process, and thus causing a disturbance. So actually all these things, they have to be taken in the proper method. Otherwise, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidhing Vina Aikantiki Hare Bhakti Udpate Aiva Kalpate. If one takes up the path of Hari Bhakti without following all the Shastric directions, then he simply causes a disturbance. Ya Shastra Vidhim Utsrija Vartate Kamakarataha Nasasidim Abapnati Nasukam Naparam Gatim. In Gita, Krishna says that one who does not follow the scriptural injunctions, but simply acts according to his own whim, cannot achieve happiness, peace, or the supreme destiny. So everything should be done according to Shastra. Not that you just pick up some book, oh, that's a nice mantra, I think I'll chant that. No, mantras have to be received from Guru. Otherwise they won't have effect. Jai Hare Krishna. We'll finish there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.